Welcome to MGO Podcast 10.24. This is kind of a long podcast. It's almost as long as the time it takes for a Z-hook to hit the top of the backboard and come on down. So, Dave, have you ever heard of Wilco?
Wilco?
Wilco.
Is that a company?
It's a band. We'd like to thank our sponsors, Underground Printing, The Bow Store, Peak Wealth Management, Homeshore Lending, the University of Michigan Alumni Association, the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Human Element, Michigan Law Grad, Lantana Hummus, and the Phil Klein Insurance Group.
I've heard of Wilco.
Oh.
You're not supposed to have just heard of Wilco. Did you just look Wilco up?
Oh, well, I was figuring you were gonna like give Dave a whole bunch of crap about it, so I was gonna have something to say about it.
Wilco is the kind of band where like their obsessives put together like lists from the top to the bottom of all the best Wilco songs. So like I am trying to break your heart would probably be number one on a list.
Is that one of their bigger songs?
Well, they're not really a band with big songs.
Every song sounds the same.
Not true at all.
How do you
absolutely every Wilco song I've ever heard?
You just looked them up. You don't even know who they are.
I thought you were going to be talking to Dave for a while, so I was going to find something interesting to add to this because I know nothing like interesting about Wilco. They are just like the least interesting band in like band recollection.
That is deeply unfair.
Is this the tail end of last podcast?
No. I have a point. If you guys would let me get to it and stop looking up Wilco on Wikipedia.
Their new studio album is named Star Wars.
I don't know what to think about that. Anyway, so if you were going to make a list of Xavier Simpson games in the manner of a Wilco fan, I think this one sits right at the top. Now, we've got a year and change left of Xavier Simpson for him to like change that, but like this was the game where Michigan wins almost solely because of Xavier Simpson.
Yes,
and it's a road game against a top 20 opponent. It's like a 1A net win. I mean, on the team sheets, it's not just the quadrant one; it's like the quadrant 1A.
They also did not have Charles Matthews.
Which
is
Matthews.
Huge.
Nobody on the team can hit anything from outside of 2 feet.
But the thing about Matthews that's the most disconcerting is not that necessarily you lose him on the court, but that you lose a playable player on a rotation.
Yeah.
You're a six-man rotation, and now you have five guys.
Five and kind of two halves-ish.
I don't know. Castleton did all right. But anyway,
he's a half.
He has 12 points, which isn't a whole lot of points, on 6 of 7 shooting.
It's slightly efficient.
I think 5 of those were like hook shots, and 2 of them were like at the top of like our Wilco Pantheon ranking of Xavier Simpson hook shots.
Because I'm not on board with the Wilco Pantheon rating, by the way.
Okay.
Because one of those had to be from at least 10 feet.
Well, there's one where like it's late in the shot clock. Bruno Fernando knows exactly what's coming. He has like, 6 blocks in this game, and he's going all out to block this little bastard's hook shot, and he can't quite get there, and it hits the very tippy top of the backboard and falls straight in. And all the announcers, like anytime he hits a hook shot, the announcers go wee, and this one was like oh wee, and like the crowd is just like what the fuck was that?
Somebody was tweeting that they could not describe the feeling inside the arena by just the throngs of students reacting to not only like one of those, but it ended up at like 5.
They put a tracker on the screen.
So
is there going to be like a generation of kids who grow up like 5'6" kids who just practice their sky hooks now?
Now everybody's taking unassisted Steph Curry threes, and it's just going to be like the Xavier Simpson
exactly.
Generation.
the Xavier Simpson generation. At least in Michigan.
In Michigan.
Like Michigan and Michigan State are going to be fighting over kids in like 5 years or 6 years.
I don't think it'll be a nationwide phenomenon.
That's going to be part of a recruiting profile now. Do you have a resurrected Steve Nash shot?
Smurfy hook shot. Genius. But so, 6-7 and the incredible degree of difficulty on most of those shots.
Yes.
Also late clock bailouts for the offense. 10 assists. And he should have had probably 15 if anyone on this team could hit a
three-pointer. And the other one that was so great was just that reminded me so much of Nash was that, so he runs a pick and roll with Teske. Teske hasn't made a three all game, finally makes one late, and then the next time down the floor they run it again, and Fernando comes off of the pick and roll to kind of drift out to Teske because Teske's finally hit the three, and that's when Simpson just goes right by and has a layup. And he just,
But not just that. Because the possession after that, Teske pick and pop, pick and roll, he starts to the lane and then he hits the Iggy dive for layup.
Yes.
So it was back to back to back. And, you know, Maryland's getting shots. They're hitting shots at the other end. So, like, there's a lot of pressure.
Sometimes it's their fourth or fifth shot in that end.
Well, but it's a lot of pressure to, like, keep your nose ahead there. And that was, like, back to back to back clutch, crunch time. Xavier Simpson owns this game.
You're going to hate me for this, but the thing that just kept popping into my mind was he reads everything so well. It reminded me of, like, the best thing about JT Barrett is that Listen to me. Because the whole
Why? I'm like, where could he possibly go with this? And I'm like, I didn't even imagine there.
But this is, like, this is the perfect answer to that, because the thing that killed us about him was that it was not his ability to throw the ball, it was not his foot speed, it was that he always made the right decision. And there's somebody put together a YouTube clip of him, like, doing it like 90 times in a row or something, of just always making the right read.
You could literally have made the same argument with Pat White.
Okay, I didn't watch him intently, so it was
also
not
when Pat White was doing it, like, defenses didn't have any idea what they were doing.
But Simpson is in that
you're defending
vein
this?
Of where he's of like that. That was a perfect situation.
I can't, like,
because
fire him during the middle of a podcast.
He brought up JT Barrett.
We're going to let it go. We're going to let it slide. Continue. Oh,
are we done? Are we going to... Any other comments? No.
So, like, would you rather have your bro be Matt McQuaid like Ed Feng or JT Barrett? Like,
I'm making a reference that can maybe heal some old wounds by saying now we have one of them.
Honestly, I would take the JT Barrett guy.
Yeah, because Barrett was a dude.
Yeah, not like that's out of my head. Like, it's just, it's there anyway. Like, I can't get it out.
You make reads like that, and that's what you want from your point guard. You want to see the court and to see the opponents and then to make the decision as to do I drive, do I pass, and then am I setting him up for a play or two down the road, which is exactly what he did, three possessions in a row. And got Michigan 7 points in the last five-ish minutes of the game.
He controls this game with 7 shots. Like, he's the most important player on the floor with 7 shots.
And, like, when Michigan was struggling to get points early, like, he ran a bunch of those pick and rolls, and he got Teske dunks.
Yeah.
Like, because Michigan's missing all their threes. Teske missed.
You're talking to me like I'm disagreeing with you. I'm not disagreeing with you.
He's also...
He's fired up.
He's also a junior. And Michigan hasn't had a junior...
Well, they had Walton.
They had Walton go 4 years, but Walton was injured and not himself until, like,
Walton
the end of his senior year.
He was solid early, and then he was really great late. And the in-between time is kind of...
He was hurt. He wasn't himself.
The team wasn't very good.
Yeah, Simpson is, like, third year running this offense, and also his understudy... is going to have a couple years now to, like, actually be... We're going to have, like, several years in a row now of upperclassmen point guards in a Beilein system running it.
You look at, like, the little contributions he did in the Walton senior year as he came in to spell him for possessions now and then you look at his transformation last year, and he's evolved into a completely different player.
Has there ever been, like, a... Like, at the beginning of last year, Michigan brings in Jerron Simmons, and they start Eli Brooks for a little bit, and it's just like, this is our situation, we don't have a point guard. And now we don't just, like, have a point guard. We have the point guard.
And he's, like, the old school point guard, which is awesome in this team because he gets everybody going. And sometimes teams miss shots, like they did today, if they hit shots like that, it's because Simpson is just playing the maestro and just getting, now you get a three, you get a three, now you get a dunk, and now I'll take a hook shot.
And then the other half of it is Anthony Cowan is 4 or 15 from the floor.
Right, so what's better, his distribution or his defense?
And it's actually been disappointing this year that, I mean, how many teams in this league actually have point guards?
I mean, so even teams that have
three,
shooters who are play point guard.
Not even a good point guard, but
like Carson Edwards is not. Guard. I would not call him a point guard, but he is, you know, a hell of a player.
Yeah, and someone checkable by we haven't had the pleasure of like the stretch run last year where Z is just locking in on various stars on other teams and obliterating them to the point where they weep on the court and leave their basketball shoes and fade into nothingness, which happened to some guy who I forget because he's been erased from history by Xavier Simpson.
Man bun?
No,
he did well, actually.
No, he did not. No, he
Michigan fans will still like tip his... If you run into a guy with a man bun, you'll tip your cap just in case it's him.
So, I mean, this was like at this juncture... The ultimate Z-formance.
That's good.
Really, I mean,
his game against Ohio State this year was awesome, too.
But, like, Ohio State sucks. Right? Like,
Maryland's, like...
Well, when you take Caleb Wesson off of them, like, I'm sure every Michigan fan was like, ooh, maybe Ohio State can beat...
You watch, like, the second half of the Ohio State-Michigan State game, and you're like, oh, my God. Like, I'm debasing myself to the point where I'm like, all right, let's go Buckeyes. And and then they do that, and you're just like, ugh. So, yeah, they suck. Maryland doesn't suck. This was much superior. And then the other guy who had a night was Iggy Brasdeikis.
He
had a fun night.
Well, I mean, they got, what, like four foul calls in the first... It was 2 minutes?
Three in the first four. I think six at the half or something like that. And
it was something like the first like four trips he got three calls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And by the end of the game, he's drawn nine fouls and committed none. He got a little bit beat up on the boards by Jalen Smith, but that's just going to happen.
I mean, he's not nearly as big as...
Right.
I need to find a spot for a pogo stick
and
on
charts. He has one of these weird, like, how did you get all those points games where he's like got 21 by the end of the game and you're like... I remember six of those.
Well, they're all free throws. He was 7 of 8 from the line.
Yeah. And he hits a couple threes in the second half, and he has a couple of good takes. And I think an important thing is he's not just straight line driving anymore.
No.
So he was able to spin and actually, like, one of the fouls, early fouls, he does a spin move, and, like, the guy was in legal guarding position, and then the spin move, like, clap, got his arm stuck under Iggy, and that was an obvious foul. And... So that kind of diversity, I think, is good for him because he hasn't been...
Didn't he have a right-handed floater?
Yeah, but he's ambidextrous. Have you ever listened to a broadcast?
But that's one thing to have on the Michigan game bingo card, is that Iggy Brasdeikis is mostly left-handed, right-handed layup or like a putback. It's another thing to have to shoot like a 8-footer, the floater opposite hand.
And then he was keeping Michigan afloat in the first half with a ton of offensive rebounds. Yeah. He even got one taken. Like, he had...
Oh, yeah, the jump ball.
One of the worst calls I've seen all year.
The guy is like, my finger's on the bottom of the ball. I have possession, too.
Must be simultaneous.
And like, that took away an and one, mm-hmm. and it also flipped the...
Jump ball to Maryland.
So that's like a four-point call, because, like, the value of that possession arrow, when you know you're going to get it, is
in the pantheon of away games, this one was fine.
No, I mean, like, that was really the only thing that I was like, you got to be kidding me about.
Yeah.
So it was a well-officiated game, except for that. I was like, what?
All right. Do we have to talk about it?
Talk about what?
The main point that is going to be.
Oh. I mean.
First thing that we wrote on the board.
So, auto bench. So, Z picks up foul against Cowan and then has another stupid one where he's attacking it.
So he has one in the first half. Gets a second one, kind of foul kinda early,
and
in the
like,
second.
Whatever.
Yeah.
And then he kind of like loses his mind.
Because it's literally like the guy's almost out of bounds.
Yeah. And it's just like nothing is going to happen there except you're going to get a foul call on you.
And Michigan had continued to build.
But Xavier Simpson averages a foul per 17 minutes.
Yes.
So there's 18 minutes left in the game. What's the likelihood?
He might foul out with like a minute to go.
I mean,
potentially,
maybe. He might get his fourth. Like on average, he'd get his next foul
right
with a minute left in the game, and so Michigan pulls him out from like the 18:30 mark and puts him in at the under 12.
Yeah,
which is like 7 minutes. So you've already fouled him out of the last 4 minutes of the game based on how much he usually plays, and they're minus 8 in those minutes. And that was, they're like, you know, he comes back and they're down two and they push it back out. They're plus 17 the rest of this game. But like during this auto bench period, I'm like, if they lose, this is why. If they lose, this is why. If they lose, this is why. And I don't think that would, like,
yeah.
I think a lot of people on Twitter were thinking the same thing.
Well, and I think that Michigan stayed close enough that Beilein pushed it another couple minutes. Because if Maryland gets out to... So for the majority of this game, like a 4 to 7 point lead felt like a 2 touchdown lead. Because like nobody's really hitting a 3. And even twos...
There weren't any 4 to 7 point leads until...
Until late, yeah.
Well, there were 4 or 5 point leads, yeah, a few of them. And when you'd be down... Okay. But what I'm saying is like a multiple score lead felt like an eternity,
I guess.
And so Michigan never got to that point in the second half. I mean, and I think if they get to that point, then Beilein probably pulls the trigger.
But that's just...
I'm just telling you what I...
But that's like, okay, if Michigan is minus 14 instead of minus 8, he puts him in faster.
I mean, like, I didn't...
If your auto bench is an even worse idea than it usually is...
After the... Because of how bad that foul, his third foul was, it made sense to like pull him out and be like, okay, here's your minute off.
A couple minutes.
Yeah.
And but Michigan was actually a little bit unfortunate because they get a transition opportunity and Julius has a really good take to the basket.
Yep.
And then Fernando just erases it.
Comes from nowhere.
Yeah.
And like, if you're the guard, you can't predict that's going to happen. You got to just try to put it up and get your bucket. And then they get, was it an and one the other way?
Yeah, on Livers. Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's a 5-point swing that wasn't really DeJulius' fault.
No.
And then they take him out for Eli Brooks, and I'm like, like he like airballed a 10-footer or something?
Like 15, just from the free throw line, yeah.
I mean, at this...
He did take a charge.
He did take a charge.
And he was in good position. It was a solid charge. Yes, it wasn't a flop.
It was a charge that wasn't too hard to call. But like, if you're... I could see DDJ because DDJ gives you something. And he's not...
And they're using him at the two.
Yeah. They've had him in there. Just don't...
I think Beilein was just really mad about like the intelligence of that foul. Because in the post game afterwards, he's praising him. And then he's like... He had a really great game, but he did take a really bad foul, and you can be sure he's going to hear from me on that one. Just goes on about it.
I think it's just irrational. Like, he wants to punish the players for committing stupid fouls.
Well, but I mean, we don't necessarily disagree with like the pool stuff.
No, but
the entirety of the Beilein, you know, time at Michigan, they don't foul. Like, that's part of this team. Right. So,
like, if you have a guy who has 2.4 fouls per 40 minutes. And he's got 3 at beginning of the second half. It's like, and he's playing out of his mind is the other thing.
That is true. I think it was, like you said, I think it was a punishment for, not that he got his third, but like, what are you doing on that one?
I mean, and like, sure, the first like 3 minutes with DDJ, that's fine. But you got to bring him back at like,
the 14-minute mark or something?
15, 14.
Yeah.
And not let him sit out for another 10% of the game.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree with you. It's just that I think that I've gotten to the point of where I just expect that from Beilein now, especially if Michigan is
remotely in
the game.
I expect it. I don't like it. I don't know if that's been made clear.
I don't know. I'm sure we'll find out on next week's podcast.
It's just a terrible feeling when like the third foul comes and you're just like, no, you can just see.
So you can just see
your win probability chart go.
The other thing that was kind of interesting I was thinking is like, is that Xavier's first foul trouble of the year?
No, he had one other game in which DDJ had to come in.
He had two late in the first.
Yeah, two late.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a home game.
Was it Maryland? Was it the other Maryland game?
It could have been.
It was, yeah. Because DDJ locked Cowan down. Cowan didn't even get a shot up against
him. Yes, that's right.
So wow. Maryland is like, yeah, DDJ, this guy, they play him a lot.
And sometimes they bring in Brooks.
And then I guess number 3 on our list of good things that happened in this game is Bruno Fernando, while he was a total beast on the defensive end, has 12 points on 14 shot opportunities, 3 turnovers, 1 assist.
He also had like 4 offensive rebounds and 10 total. I
understand that, but if you're keeping a guy who's like a 70% shooter to under a point per possession, well under.
And he only had 2 free throws. That was the other thing. Yeah, I guess he's an efficient free throw shooter.
Yeah, he's a 75% guy.
They didn't put him at the line a ton.
Kevin Castleton in there as your pesky backup, and Teske was magnificent against him too. Yeah. But having
what do you mean two? He was the
Teske. I didn't want to like go into my into like how much we love Castleton without like doing the boring like Teske is freaking awesome thing, right? Like. This is Maurice Hurst backup. We're like, everyone has agreed that Teske is amazing like and played amazing again, right?
I feel like you should just say, DeHooley is also all the time. So Castleton couldn't handle Fernando. He picked up a bunch of fouls in like 2 minutes against
him. He could handle Smith.
That was planned by Beilein.
It's fine. Like, I don't expect that he's going to be able to handle Fernando. But against Jalen Smith, that was a matchup I was completely comfortable with. Like, and that's a five-star freshman versus like the number 92 guy in the country.
Yeah.
And
he won that tip out.
Yeah, and I thought he was a completely equal matchup for Jalen Smith when they were both at the five. And then they wouldn't put Smith at the five for the rest of the game, so he had to like have a couple minutes against Fernando. And he's 20 pounds short of where he needs to be to deal with that. But he had the dunk on the dump down from Simpson, and that's really important because we've seen with Teske like all those like alley oops he's able to get to and put in versus like an Austin Davis.
Yeah.
Well, like you can trust him. You can put the ball down there, right, and expect that he'll get there.
If he has it up high, it's really up high. And to be able to dunk from that kind of like kind of standing under the basket, like that's a 100% shot instead of like a 70% shot. And that's a big deal.
And that was a feeder lob. Like that wasn't like an alley oop. That was like you have an angle, I'll feed you as you're rolling to the rim. You release, catch, and then finish. And he did. And that was, he did as well as you possibly could in that situation.
Yeah. And
that's not something we've seen from backup fives.
We'll talk about this more in the next section because there's really the only thing we can talk about it. But he's really kind of been very encouraging over the last few games.
And probably the most encouraging thing is the fact that like that's the first guy Beilein went to, because he's played in other games before, and then you haven't seen him for a couple games, and then he has to come in for another reason, and then it's John's, and it was immediately the first substitution they needed when they took Teske out was Castleton, and I was like, okay, maybe we've gotten to the point of where now it looks like,
oh, there's no question.
Well, we've thought so, but
I know, but
it hasn't been shown in games and on film to be the case, and I think that now it's bearing itself out.
And there's no question.
While we're on the five, like Castleton had the dunk, but Teske had some great roles. They're like, they're still attacking that.
Yeah,
and that was like a big thing after Michigan State. I think
Fernando bothers him when he's trying to shoot threes.
Do you think that's what it is?
Like. That's why he leaves them all short, because he's trying to get him over Fernando.
Oh, because he's just trying to get it out? And
yeah, so he kind of rushes it a little bit, and I think he might like be changing his angle a little bit. So his three-pointer is often pretty flat, but that's what works for him. And I think that's what works for a lot of seven-footers when they shoot threes, and now he's trying to arc it, and it just wasn't working. And, we didn't really see him try to back cut Fernando at all.
Right.
Like there's one time, and then Fernando kind of grabbed him, and I was waiting for the call and didn't come. But like, I don't know. I don't think he has like the mobility to do that against a guy like Fernando, who's like a legit.
Yeah. NBA center. Most of the guys in the NBA don't either.
But I just think that's like, they're both bad offensive matchups for each other.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like neither one really got much done in either of these games.
Yeah. No, I'm agreeing with you. Then Livers had a good second half.
Yeah, I mean...
Three threes and two free throws and bounced back, and it kind of got their three-point.
I mean, he was getting open for his threes, too. I mean, they just weren't going in. Like, they were bouncing off the rim twice.
Well,
like,
he had that dagger after the...
Yeah.
They made note of it on the telecast, but like that was so great by Iggy to not panic, because he gets the ball with like 5 seconds left, and usually you could just chalk something up, but he waits. Livers comes off a cut, hits him, drains it, and then I was kind of like, that might be it.
That was it. Like, that was the dagger. And that's nice, because we haven't really seen Iggy pass the ball.
An assist. Like, he did that. That was his assist.
So it's nice to see that when surrounded by three different guys, he's like, maybe I'll get rid of this. He had a good game, but like his like sophomore area for improvement, if we have a sophomore year with him, is definitely like get that assist rate up into.
Well, and that's something that other freshmen have developed. LeVert kind of became like that. Stauskas kind of became like that. Irvin became like that. So,
and one of the things that Iggy gave us in this game is he didn't come off the court. I can't remember him coming off at all, really.
He did sit in the first a little later.
I think he had 38 minutes.
Yeah. So
okay. Like yeah. So, minutes.
But no. I mean, yeah. But everyone has to. Without Matthews, I mean, what are you gonna? This you're gonna have to get 35
without,
from
yeah,
everyone.
Yeah. Without Matthews, you have to figure out your rotation somehow. And yeah, as long as Iggy's out there,
you don't have a wing backup anymore. Mm-mm. So you've got Castleton and you've got DDJ, but like,
which is
the three and the four?
Something else we can talk about in the next segment.
There's nothing. So, which is a little disappointing. You'd like to see, but they spent so much time with Johns at the five that I'm sure that he's not ready to go at the four, really.
I wouldn't think so.
No. He did have a... Well, that's the next segment. Do we have anything else for the Maryland game?
I don't think so.
The Red Panda?
highlights. That was, love it. And Scott Van Pelt was throwing her bowls. This is good.
Yeah, that'd be a lot of pressure. Like, there's a woman on a unicycle who's like a legend, and you're throwing bowls at her?
Yeah. Dishware, yeah.
I mean, like, what if you screw it up and Red Panda takes a fall, and then that's the end of Red Panda?
Dude, Scott Van Pelt's... He's the man. He's not screwing that up.
I'm not saying that, like, I mean, I don't know.
Red Panda has, like, a large range. Like, you know, she's got, like, Teske's level of...
Sure, I'm not dissing Red Panda. I'm just like, that's a high-stress environment.
Yeah. Yeah, she did drop one, I think, a month ago or so like that. So her streak of no drops
How
ended.
Do you know this?
Because Twitter talks about Red Panda.
Red Panda's great. Love it.
You know, if I saw Red Panda miss, I wouldn't say anything about it. Like, I just think that makes the world worse. Like, I don't need to know that.
That's fair.
Why did you tell me that?
Because that's the kind of place Twitter is.
That's your last place on the Wilco pantheon of Red Panda facts.
I am still not on board with the Wilco pantheon.
It doesn't matter. You're in last place in Red Panda facts Wilco
we've
pantheon.
We bookended this segment with Wilco. I think it's time for Nebraska.
Fine.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. It's over.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless, it's online, it's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout-out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor, downtown.
Passion for e-commerce.
Sell stuff online.
Security. Performance.
Conversion.
Beautiful user experiences.
Belle expérience utilisateur.
Monthly marketing.
PPC SEO.
Make your user a customer.
Conversion. version.
Eau de Parfum for online retailers. Love your website. Let Human Elements show you how. Available at human-element.com and find department stores, not find department stores.
I wanna hold you in the Bible, black freedom. You're quite a quiet domino. Bury me now. Take up your band-aid, cause I don't believe in touchdowns. What was I thinking when we said hello?
Before we move on from the Maryland game, I have a quote tweet to relate to you. And it's a quote tweet of Brendan Quinn, who notes that Maryland fans chant, "You are ugly," at Ignas Brazdeikis during two free throws. And Ignas Brazdeikis quote tweets this tweet with, "My girl's the baddest, though, so I stay winning." And guess who retweeted it? Amy Yaklich.
She's a good Twitter.
She is. She is a good Twitter. She's good Twitter. Nebraska did not show up.
No. Nebraska, like, or they like left. After 5 minutes of this game, they're like, okay, this is enough.
This was a Dakich game.
Were they even there, like, at all? Like, they haven't been there for, like, a month.
Well, after Copeland, they've just sucked. So.
And tried? Maybe?
They didn't do what they did in this game and a lot of their games. But this was a Dan Dakich game, and Dan Dakich...
If you're going to have a no-try game, you don't want to do it with Dakich on the call.
No, because he's going to be entertaining.
Dakich always talks about how the only thing that matters in basketball is trying really hard, and the ball knows. And in this game, he was right. So, like, usually it's kind of like, all right, yes, I understand that effort is a big part of basketball, but can we please talk about anything else ever? And in this one, he was just like, Nebraska doesn't care. And I was like, yep.
Yeah.
I mean, KenPom time started probably with 11, 12 minutes left in the first half.
Yeah, thereabouts.
Somewhere. It was like a 20. It was like
whenever he benched Roby.
36-17, and I was kind of like, all right, well.
Well, I mean, so Michigan goes 12 of 22 from three in this game, and they win by 30 points. And I feel like they kind of deserve to do that against Maryland. Like they had a lot of great shots in the first half that just didn't go down. They're plus 17 with Xavier on the floor. If they hit like a crappy number of threes instead of an abominable number of threes, they win that game by 30 points.
And they did in the second half, and they extended when Z was in.
And, you know, I just, it kind of feels like the tourney run last year, where it's like, oh, we had this like rock fight with Montana.
Right.
We have this rock fight with Houston. And then we set Texas A&M absolutely on fire, like just from the drop.
I mean, we have not had defensive teams for a long time, but defensive basketball is that one game where you hit 50%, you're just unstoppable.
Yeah, it's just over.
Yeah.
And this was this game where Michigan was getting really good looks from the start and knocking them down. And there wasn't really, you know, a whole lot else to say about it. So this is Michigan's first game without Charles Matthews. And Palmer goes 3 of 15.
Against Livers.
Livers. And, like, that's not – like, Palmer's been terrible.
Right.
He was like 34% from two in Big Ten play before this game. But
he's the most disappointing player in the Big Ten this year.
Absolutely. Like, he was like third team all Big Ten last year.
Yeah.
And now he's got like an O rating of under 100, which is bad.
Yeah. No, but that's
58 kind of, in this game.
But I mean, this is kind of the Nebraska ball that we were expecting for the last month when we're kind of looking at this schedule. I mean, they just have not been competing against anyone.
They lost Copeland and like
there was like a cliff.
Yeah, because what is,
and they weren't great at the beginning of the Big Ten, if I remember.
But they were 13-6 when Copeland goes out, and they're tracking towards a bid.
They also lost some close games earlier in the year.
But like, what is Nebraska's like MO on defense?
Switching
everything.
Yeah, that killed us last year.
Right, and like, what are you going to do with Tanner Borchardt out there? You can't do it.
Switch.
I mean, the other four guys can switch, but
and they did. So this was the game after the Michigan State game, and it was clear that every practice after the Michigan State game, if you didn't dump it down on a mismatch in the post, you got an electric shock.
Jordan Poole had 5 assists.
And he had a turnover, and that turnover was dumping it down to the post, and every Michigan fan was like,
fine, it's cool.
That's fine. Like, that's completely fine. Keep doing that. And, you know, he has 0 shots in the first half. And then I think his first shot was like the badass and one dunk.
Yep.
Yeah. And he gets up and he's doing his pool stuff. He's not pouting. He's just like dialing it back. And, you know, I think we've seen him under control and, you know, chastened, but also like making progress these last
a little days. More focused, maybe.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't, I mean, because a lot of his stuff was, I mean, you talk about his bad shots, but also like his defense was like, oh my goodness, against Michigan State. And right. We haven't seen that either of the past two games.
No, and like it's not like he was going up against guys who are really threats, but like Matt McQuaid isn't a threat, right? Like he hits some threes, but he's a 13% usage guy who's terrible inside the line, right?
Yeah.
And 95% assisted.
Right. So like to like hold guys like Ayala and Wiggins without a lot of 3-point attempts, to hold what's his name? The sophomore for Nebraska?
Amir Harris?
Or
No, Thomas Allen?
Thomas Allen.
Oh, yeah, the Mara-like.
Yeah, I've watched a lot of Nebraska games, and, like, he's a good player. Like,
Brian's a secret Nebraska fan, by the way.
They're going to be terrible next year, but he's going to have, like, 30% usage, and he's going to be, like a mini Carson Edwards. And
wow, that's pretty small.
Well, in terms of, like, efficiency.
Oh, okay.
But he got shut down in this game, mostly by Poole. So, like, that is something you want to see him respond to, like, the worst game of his career.
And the thing with Poole is, like, it's not can he play defense, or it's more, like, will he? And, like, that's why, like, looking at this game, it was kind of like, it was hard to watch him because I'm like, all right, he's doing the right things, that's great. But will he against Maryland? And right. Will the trend stick? Like, will he stay focused? Will he stay, like, will he want to do that against?
I mean, I don't know if it's a matter of, like, focus and want to, or if it's just, like, he kind of gets overexcited. Like, I think it's more of a, he's trying too hard. Like he's trying to win the game on every defensive back. Like, you know, he's jumping up to block a McQuaid 3 when just, like, just put your hand in your face.
But that was, like, breakdown number 5 of that game.
I know, but, like,
he's a street baller. And I know, sometimes we love that but in him, and it makes him a cool personality. But, like, I'd rather – this is exactly what I want out of Jordan Poole. He plays within the system. He plays well. And then, you know, he'll mug for the camera when he gets something fun.
I mean, I don't like street ball as a appellation. But, like, I just think it's not really about effort level. I just think it's about,
well, mental level,
I guess.
I mean, that's what it seems to me. Cause it's not like, because then in the Nebraska game too, he also had like a really nice rip on a big guy, like on the baseline. So like it's not like he can't do those things. It's just, you know, will he? And to see him kind of understand that, okay, this is maybe a backseat game for me. I'm going to feed the post. We're going to look at that, and I'm going to be disciplined enough to continue to make those passes, to continue to follow guys. I mean, that's good. But then he backed it up with a solid performance today, and it's like, okay, now this is something going into the state game where they're going to need him to play well because they don't have Matthews. They're also going to need him to play well on defense because they don't have another backup wing. So him having kind of a rogue game is going to be like kind of death to Michigan if he does on next Saturday. So seeing that happen 2 games in a row is I guess makes me feel a little better.
Okay. We've kind of buried the lead here. I mean, this game
the backups
quickly turned into like, ooh, maybe we
the
do
Y2Ks.
Have do we maybe we do have some bench players. I mean, Colin Castleton goes 5-7 from the floor, and a couple of those are rolls to the basket, and we talked kind of in the Maryland segment where like having a guy who can finish with dunks around the hoop is an important factor. Mm-hmm. But, like, he posts Palmer up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and he goes up with an up fake, and then he goes up again and gets an easy bucket. He gets a roll to the basket, and 2 guys are coming at him. He shows the ball, and Nana Akenton jumps over him mostly.
Oh, jeez.
Sort of.
That was a little scary.
It was a little scary, but he puts the ball on the ground with a power dribble, comes out the other side, gets an and one, a bit of an NBA continuation, but we'll let that go. all continuation should be NBA.
And then he had a dunk in transition that would have just blown the roof off Chrysler that he missed.
He missed.
But he caught the ball and got it to the rim. Like it could have easily gone through his hands and hit him in the face.
Yeah.
But it didn't. He caught it, didn't put it in a bad spot, got up and just missed a dunk. And I can live with that.
And then his other miss, he rebounded and put back.
Right.
So in the half court, he was 5 of 5.
Yep.
And those were not all just I catch it and dunk it. He made a lot of that happen himself.
Yeah, and there's a variety, like you talk about, there's a variety of different finishes. It wasn't just in one way.
And the thing is, like, if you go back and you look at his high school film, there's a lot more. Like,
I mean, he's rumored to be like...
He was a 30...
He's a Mo.
He was right. A 38% three-point shooter in high school.
Wagner in 2 years or something was right. What we were talking about.
And, like, he's able to drive from the perimeter and that he has that Mo behind the back thing.
Yep.
He has the Dirk Nowitzki pogo stick jumper. he has that. And like that's probably not going to be a 60% shot or anything, but as a late clock option, yeah, that can be there.
Or something that no one will have scouted.
And so like his skill level is really, really high, and it's just really a matter of him filling out.
It's been great to see his hands already. And like the players know it, so they know that, so it's got to be something that they're seeing too, where you can just put the ball down there. If he's got it 6 inches on a guy, just put the ball up to him, and he'll come down with it and make a play.
It's night and day between him and Davis.
Yeah. Or Johns.
I mean, Johns had like his moments against Indiana.
But didn't he fumble one against State,
Johns
I think?
Johns is shorter than every center in the Big Ten except for Juwan Morgan.
Who's 4'11". But
getting smaller.
But he's a true five.
Right.
He's able to move around a lot like Teske, though, because he's a little bit lighter. He's got crazy pterodactyl arms. And I think once he's a little bit more Sanderson'd up, his block rate will come up.
When after Wagner's first year, you were doing a podcast with Ace, and I distinctly remember what you saying that Wagner needed to do in the offseason was get into a push-up machine with sticks of butter.
Okay.
So maybe we can
get that back off the shelf.
Bring that contraption out.
Well, I mean, if he says he's up to 230, and I don't believe it, but he says it. So we're going to pretend that he's 230. So by next year, he should be
230.
Okay. Well, that's you're a little shorter. by next year, he might be up to like Teske last year in terms of like, oh, our backup five is kind of awesome.
Where he can play 10, 12 minutes and there's not a huge drop off.
Yeah. I mean, there's probably going to be a drop off, but like.
Sure.
But there's also things that you have to scout on him and you have to prepare for.
Well, if you remember last year, like we were like Ace and I were talking at the end of the season and I'm like, you know, I know Mo Wagner is our best player and he's about to be an NBA draft pick, but I'm just not concerned about what's going to happen.
Because there might be an improvement at the center position in a lot of ways.
And I think he's John Teske is a better player this year than Mo was last year. Because he's so much better on defense. I mean, like, he's not the offensive player that Mo was. He doesn't have the usage he does, but like it's just absolute night and day.
He doesn't have the same creation. But his pick and roll has to be just as good. His finishing around the rim has to be just as good. And his shooting is not at the same level, but it's like gone up since
it's a trip,
as the year has gone on.
Where he wins is trip by trip. Like every single time you go down the floor, there's a 7'3" guy in the way. He's affecting everything near the rim. And doesn't turn the ball over.
We shouldn't overstate like that, like Wagner's defense wasn't that much of a drag. Michigan's defense by the end of the year was the third best defense in the country.
True.
But like they haven't lost anything from it. What they have lost is their ability to bring in John Teske for 15 minutes.
I was going to make another reference and then I decided against it.
So he's I'm looking forward to
thank you for that,
Castleton next year, and hopefully he can maintain this. Like I'm pretty comfortable if he's going to be out there against like non-NBA bigs.
I mean, if he's playing against a backup five, which is what he is, I mean, how many backup fives in the country are you sitting there thinking, oh, no, Castleton's going to get destroyed in this matchup?
Yeah, Jalen Smith might be up there.
He's a starter.
No, but like, but he'd be the guy he'd be going up against.
I guess.
The five when Fernando goes out. But we just saw him pretty much battle that guy.
And he was fine.
Yeah, he was fine. So that's it's a little bit later than McGarry, but I think that could be really important in the tournament. And then David DeJulius was only, I think, one of four from the floor. His make was pretty impressive, a take to the bucket, which got an and one.
Yep. They finally got called on one of those, because I think he's been pushed down like several of those. Yeah, like, he gets those freshman calls.
His make against Maryland was like, dude, that's like three fouls.
Yeah.
He's quick.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's quick. He's got that something to him, and he's obviously, you know, a freshman who's...
He doesn't know, I don't think, much of the offense. Some, but I think that when he starts to feel more comfortable with it, you're going to see
some things. The thing that kind of jumps out is he was a step back merchant,
right?
In high school, just like the king of all step backs. And when he's doing it in college, like, I don't know if it's the extra length or he's just not comfortable with it, but he's not getting the separation he needs to get a shot off. So in this Nebraska game, he got stuck with the ball late clock and, you know, didn't pass it. And then he picked up his dribble, and there was nothing to do, and so he kind of just threw up a no-hoper.
Yeah, like a leaner, yeah. But he one of his other misses was he had a stutter step that he lost a guy and just blew the layup. So, I mean, if he makes that, if that goes in, he's 2 of 4 with two kind of takes to the rim, and you're kind of like, I mean, I can think of a lot worse things for my point guard than that.
Well, he's playing very revved right now, and I'd much rather have a freshman getting in there who just like wants to go to the basket and wants to put up shots and wants to like mix it up.
Well, he can get to the rack, and
yeah,
there's a big difference between guys who can get to the rack and guys who can't. Like Livers can't get to the rack.
Yeah,
maybe every once in a while. Eli Brooks cannot get to the rack.
Yeah,
but DDJ can get to the rack. Maybe you should just call him DDJ.
I mean, that's what
I can say to Julius now. Now that he's played a little
but
bit.
But now I don't want you to.
Yeah, now, I mean, this,
now it's
this
like
is
a constant disappointment.
I started writing it with a WHO, DeJulius.
We should see how many people we can convince his name is actually DeJulius.
The coconut ranch of the Michigan.
I don't
families.
Want this to be my brand.
It's too late.
You got stuck with the egg thing.
It's either this or like
I'm
one
proud
week.
To own
you're
eggs.
Like either, either that or Bare Naked Ladies fan. Those are your choices.
Still an improvement over the guy who got lost at Penn State.
Oh man.
Why would you bring that up?
We went deep into the Seth folder today.
That's it. That's my whole life right there.
Oh, God. I'm lost. Is there something? Oh, I wanted to talk a little bit about Livers.
Yes.
Sure.
Because I thought that Livers had a nice game. And he was one of the players that, with Matthews out, when potentially maybe then for the Maryland game, which ended up being true, that was worth watching in that Nebraska game. Because he was a guy that you wanted to see perform in starters' minutes. And I thought that maybe he was scraping the edge of his ceiling in terms of like what you'd feel comfortable with his usage. Because he did have a few turnovers.
Yeah,
a couple of them were not great.
Well, he's trying to get in the lane, and it's just not working out.
Well, one of them was like a turnover near the top of the key where he's passing it and he gets tipped away. And you're kind of like, that's just not a great pass. But he did shoot 4 of 9, 3 of 6. Got to the line, got 10 rebounds, and he did have 3 assists. So he is growing, but like we were talking in prep, and you were kind of like, yeah, he's still a work in progress a little bit.
I mean, he's a guy who I'm like, let's try to get him to like 18%.
Yeah.
Like, because last year he was at 11 or 12, which is like Grady Eifert level usage. Or McBob. No, McBob is like 5.
McBob broke my scale. Like the thickness of those rings on that thing is like based off of their usage. And my scale only went to like 9%.
So he was at like 12 last year. He's up to like 15-ish this year. So just kind of get a few more shots that he creates himself. And I'll tell you what, he's doing pretty well is he's not necessarily picking and popping. But when Michigan is going into like... I guess they're 4-5 ball screens.
Right.
Where he's just pulling up. Like he did against Michigan State. He did it against Maryland, where he's just able to like, all right, you're going to go under this. Not against me.
Yeah, no, he's a great... I mean, he's arguably as good a shooter as they have.
He's a 45% three-point shooter.
Exactly. So getting him shots is not the worst thing.
Yeah, he's just got to take them. Like, he's passed up, like...
And I think that's a bit of his personality in terms of, like, he's used to coming off the bench. He started a little bit last year.
It's weird that, like, he and Poole are such bros.
Well, they fit perfectly.
It's like the odd couple.
I mean, somebody said, and I don't remember, it could have been Beilein, it could have been another reporter, but said that was the best thing for Poole is living with Livers this year.
Well, so, I mean, he should have, like, no conscious conscience if he's got an open three. Like,
right.
Just take it. No. I mean, he's the guy who caused John Beilein to say, shoot the thudging ball at one point. And I'm like, I agree.
And when it's you and not Brooks, it's saying something.
Yeah. I mean, he's given his stats and his stroke. He's just got to let fly when he gets an open look.
But I would say that those are the three guys that were like that you'd focus on in this game, and all three came out with pluses.
Yeah, and other than Poole kind of like,
well,
not pouting, but like dialing it back. Like I think
yeah, those, passive
those
Poole.
Are the important. Yeah,
passing Poole. There you go.
All right, so let's take a break. Come back, talk a Big Ten in general.
In most good movies, there's a hero and a coach. You are the hero, like Luke Skywalker. We are your coach, like Yoda. It's Nick Hopwood from
Peak Wealth Management,
your MGO financial coach. Learn more at peakwm.com/MGOblog. I'm the CFP who coaches people just like you. We both hate going to weddings on Michigan football Saturdays. And just like Luke, most of you need a little bit of coaching and guidance. And to qualify as a coach needs to have empathy and authority. Yoda has empathy because he's been battling the Sith for hundreds of years. We have empathy because we've seen people we care about making terrible financial decisions, putting their retirement at risk. Yoda has authority because he's arguably the most powerful Jedi of all time. We have authority because we have an economics degree from Michigan, we are a CFP, we have 20 years in the business, and we manage over 145 million of client assets, and we've seen hundreds of cases. You are the hero, and we are your financial coach. If you're ready for a second opinion about your financial future, check out peakwm.com/amgoblog today.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout-out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Here's a thing people say. Seth, tell me about your insurance.
I'm actually glad you asked me about that because I just changed my insurance and I'm really happy I did.
Let me guess, you use Phil Klein and Owen Rosen of the Phil Klein Insurance Group.
They are MGO blog readers and they don't advertise during football games.
And they've got a 5-star rating on anything you would care to see. Call Owen at 248-682-7445 or visit them online at philklineinsurance.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Fly, you can fight, and you can fly.
So Michigan has one game left. Purdue has two. Michigan's path to a Big Ten title is Purdue loses one of their two games.
Yes.
Probably at Minnesota.
I think that the other one is...
At Northwestern? Probably not so much.
Maybe at one time earlier we would have been a little more confident, but that was a while ago.
For the worst team in the conference, they're not terrible.
But they are the worst team in the conference.
They are.
I don't know if we can even take away Iowa's conference room, because like Rutgers... So the Mathlete was on our Slack chat today, and this is like a cursed statement. But he said if Iowa hadn't banked in like the Joe Camp 3 to escape, that he would have been the last team in the field on his resume ranker.
He being Rutgers.
Yes.
Yes. Rutgers would be in the field in his resume ranker, which is not like a T rank that Torvik does, which actually takes into account like the history of the tournament. I don't think they would be anywhere near.
No. No, I think the
in
tournament,
reality.
Right, they would see Rutgers and
but like
walk
last
away.
Year's Nebraska team probably should have been in the tournament if you just go on their resume. And the Rutgers with one crazy basket removed kind of has a tournament worthy resume, I guess.
What are we supposed to do with that?
I hide? Buy lots of canned meals?
Conference rooms are overrated anyway. Like,
I mean,
are we even taking them away anyway?
Like, this is up for debate.
The whole country would lose them. You'd have to go to France to have a conference.
I don't know. It's weird. Like, if you lose to Rutgers in football, sure, your conference room is gone. But, like, these guys are, like, they're not bad. It's very strange. And, like, Penn State, what happened to Penn State?
Didn't you say they're the best? Someone said
they're the best team in the league in the month of February. Like, they were the number 7 team in the nation.
Well, they were, like, 0-11? Is that right?
They had an 0-8 Big Ten mark.
Yeah, they were 1-11.
1-11.
But then if you go back, I remember doing that preview. Like, they went to overtime. They lost by, like, they had a 2-point lead at Iowa.
Should have beat Purdue at home.
God, if we had that one back.
Right?
Like, they had, God. I mean, they just had this, like, series of, like, agonizingly close losses. And then they come and they kind of beat the brakes off Michigan, although, you know, Michigan pulls it back to 6 at the end of that game. And then they beat the brakes off Maryland.
But that was legit. Didn't they win by 27? That's...
So they were the number 7 team in the country over like the 8 games they played in February. Michigan was still number 9, so like that's good. Like people are like, "Oh, Michigan's kind of fading." Like, nah, not so much. It's just a really tough league.
Yeah, and we said
and they ran into a buzzsaw, the Penn State Nittany Lions.
We said sometime in the fall you were like, "KenPom has us going. We're not losing until mid January, and they have us going 15-5, and you're like, that's one seed done in this Big Ten.
I thought it should be.
Right. Well, I mean, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that, like, that's the kind of league it is that a team that goes in undefeated and it looks dominant over everyone is probably still going to lose 5 league games.
Yeah.
Like, what kind of league is this?
I mean, I didn't expect that the SEC was going to throw up 2 teams that could get 1 seeds, and also that Gonzaga would be incredibly overrated in terms of like what they've done this season.
Yeah, especially because Gonzaga's been up there for so long that you kind of have to.
I mean,
you kind of have to know what Gonzaga is at this point.
I mean, I guess like if you want to just do it by KenPom, then they do deserve a 1 seed. But I don't like that. I want it to be like you play to win the game, and they're in the WCC.
For a long time, KenPom was good to just like say, okay. It was us yelling about the fact that they just only cared about resume and didn't care about like whether you beat a team by 10 or by 2.
Well, I don't think that. I think they were just incorrectly valuing resumes. So, like a team like Illinois State with Yaklich, where they're like 27-5, but they lost like at like 300 plus teams.
Yeah.
But if you were a tourney worthy team playing their schedule, you would expect to lose a number of those games because road games are hard. And they just...
Well, they were doing terrible. I mean, RPI was averaging, you know, the 300 team. So beating the 300 team was like twice as bad as losing to the 50 team.
Yeah. It's interesting how all the net complaints have completely gone away. because they put the net up for the first time, and people are like, this is terrible. There's some Yahoo article about a guy who's like, look at this difference between the net and the and KenPom. It's, right. This is stupid. And now, like, everything about net that's a, like a little bit of a wee problem is the fact that it is really slavishly adhering to KenPom. Like,
right.
Like, it's too KenPom-y. And I guess, like, if you're looking – if it's good for a team sheet metric. But, like, yeah. If you're, like, okay, so – Gonzaga's ranked first in the net. They deserve a one seed. I don't agree with that. This is how we should evaluate Gonzaga's resume by like a Ken Pommy metric. Then I think that's a good one. But
yeah.
So do you want to look at teams that you don't want to face in the Big Ten tournament?
Iowa.
That's
Iowa.
That's it.
At the beginning of the year, you could have said Iowa.
Okay.
I mean, we're going to face Michigan State.
Sure, on Saturday. But I just meant like for Friday.
Your opener?
Yeah.
Iowa. What are our options there?
Well, there's a bit of a drop-off after the sixth team. So the number three is probably going to get Iowa.
And number
unless they lose to somebody else, which is, as we've found out. But, I mean, I remember Illinois was making a run and knocking teams off. They beat Michigan State. I think they may have given somebody else a run.
I mean, Illinois, they play that really annoying up-tempo... Not up-tempo, but I guess they are up-tempo, but they are defensive turnover-based.
Yeah, I just try to steal everything.
And I'm just like, given the way X is playing, that doesn't bother me.
No, we're the team that Illinois does not want to face.
Especially because Io is so good in transition, and he was able to like get like what 15 points in the first half against us or something. And then in the second half, he got turned off. Because he's really not a great half-court player.
Do you think not having Matthews would hurt us in that matchup?
I mean, Io's not...
Having Castleton is going to help a lot more than having no five in the back.
Because of Bahanishvili?
Bahanishvili got ate up by Teske. I don't think that's going to change. So, like, I don't think Io's a really great half-court player against a lot of kids. So, like...
Against Iowa, their weakness is they have no defense at the five. And what was Michigan not doing when we faced them? It's not attacking the five. So
and they zone, and we have these games where we can't hit the barn from three. Yeah.
So 7, 8, 9, and 10 in the Big Ten right now are Ohio State, Minnesota, Rutgers, and Illinois. So are any of those teams?
Do I not want to face any of those teams? No, none of those teams really scare me.
So that's why I think. I mean, obviously, you always want to beat Michigan State. You always want to finish as high as you can. But finishing first or second means you're going to draw. Probably,
one of those four.
Probably yeah. One of those teams and not Iowa. And three looks like, because it looked like Iowa has Wisconsin. And so it looked like maybe that was going to be a battle for the fifth or sixth spot. And so they could flip. But now with the Rutgersing, it doesn't seem that one game is
going
to matter.
Where's Penn State going to be?
Penn State currently is tied for 13th with Nebraska. So if they win their last game, maybe they move ahead. But they're playing the first day,
so
if they play Michigan, they'll be on their third game in 3 days.
Well, they'd also get the four, and Michigan can't be the four. So if they're the
well, it depends on which.
There's no reseeding, so if they're the 13, then they would get the four.
But I mean, they could move up to the 12,
right?
We could get Ohio State. I would take.
Yeah, that's. I mean, that's what you want. Ohio State. You want Minnesota, right? That's. I mean, Michigan's matchup in those two games is fantastic.
Minnesota. I mean, as long as
they're
make
not
shots,
gonna, they're not going to lose to Rutgers, right? Like they just.
Like, didn't they already?
That's what everyone says before they lose their conference.
Michigan has not lost.
Okay. Yeah. Like, I thought you meant Ohio State, because I think Ohio State did lose to Rutgers.
The Michigan-Rutgers game is going to be just like the game at Rutgers, where like, you know, Rutgers is going to play some defense.
Icky, and pick and pop.
And yeah.
Michigan hits anything at all, and that's...
Yeah. Right. The second... It will feel like it should be a 20-point lead until it actually is.
Like, I guess if Matthews isn't playing... The teams I would not want to face have like a really good wing score, which is Iowa.
Well, I mean, Iowa presents a number of issues, right?
Right, but that's like just kind of reinforces that because like Rutgers doesn't have one, Minnesota doesn't have one, Ohio State doesn't have one.
I'd be happy never to see Wisconsin again.
See, well, that kind of goes without saying.
Wouldn't you rather see Wisconsin than Iowa?
No.
You would rather see Iowa than Wisconsin?
Wait, I would rather see Iowa than Wisconsin.
You're playing them in different games anyway.
But I mean, you would rather on Friday, you would rather face Iowa than face Wisconsin.
Yes.
Why is that?
I hate watching Wisconsin play basketball.
Okay, that's not what I... Okay.
I mean, is that not a valid reason?
No, it's the valid reason is trying to get to Saturday.
It is perfectly valid to have to spend, you know, certain number of hours watching basketball to say I don't ever want to see Wisconsin basketball ever again.
Yeah, man.
Well, I'm surprised that you didn't say Wisconsin first then of teams you didn't want to face.
I think it was a given.
Yes, I don't want to face Wisconsin.
Okay. Well, they probably won't.
Good.
So maybe on Sunday or Saturday.
Do you think Pat Chambers has saved his job?
Did you see that no call at the end of the game when he just lost it on the sideline?
Oh, against were they playing?
Wisconsin. They almost won. They're down like 2 or 3 or something, but there's a foul. That wouldn't
have mattered. They were down 3. It would have been a 2-shot foul. So it's like.
But.
It was.
Yeah, that's troll center to the extreme, yeah, is it not?
I completely agree with you. You know, one thing that bothers me about Wisconsin is that when they're on defense, they play. They have this like kaleidoscopic flashing light that reflects off the court. And it's just super annoying to watch.
During the game?
Yeah.
You haven't noticed this? That's not legal.
I would think so, too.
Wouldn't that be like piping in noise during the game?
Well, I bet Wisconsin does that, too.
Well, the fans are allowed to. Like, you can play a cowbell and yell and all that stuff.
Tigers fans are still mad about Minnesota blowing the Twins, screwing us on the 87. That's really way off topic, isn't it?
Yes.
You can cut that.
He
part.
Brings in baseball and like you yell at me for a perfectly good analogy in the first segment.
My point is they did it for like 10 years and like it was totally illegal and everyone was saying that they were doing it and like it just kept happening.
See, if it
that's kind of what I feel like when you go to the troll game? Center.
If it was
who cares?
If it was the Brewers, then it would be
in the playoffs. Baseball playoffs actually like matter.
Why does baseball even have playoffs?
Oh, my gosh. Okay. I know where you're going with this, and I don't disagree, but I think this is maybe a summer podcast.
Sure. So, Michigan State.
We'll leave the boys of summer for the summer.
Scott Bell's revenge.
Are we going to address
that? I don't even know what he's thought about this. I haven't heard from Scott Bell
for so long. Are we going to address this?
We have to.
What do you mean, are we going to address it?
That Scott Bell has apparently been banned from Twitter.
So they put Nazis back on Twitter faster than they put Scott Bell back on Twitter. Literally.
It's got to be automated, right? So like they got a whole bunch.
I don't know how.
Is it yellow card accumulation?
It can't be automated because I would have gotten suspended. There's definitely been.
Do you want to get suspended? Would you look at that as a badge of honor?
No, I would. I mean, it's just.
I think a little bit.
It's just because Twitter is a dumb company.
I
knew a guy who used to work at Twitter. I'm like, your company sucks, and he's like, yeah. And they stopped working at Twitter because they suck.
So the revenge is.
Well, so Indiana is like down 5-6 points pretty much the whole second half
or more.
And they just kind of...
And you're waiting for Michigan State to just put it on there.
Scrape over the top.
Or just waiting for Indiana to implode.
Yeah.
More likely.
And, like, Romeo Langford is doing his level best to implode Indiana, but Justin Smith won't let it happen. And he's, like, knocking in threes and getting and-one putbacks, and he just looks like... Like, I compared him to Brett Petway.
You did.
Because that's what he was against Michigan. And, like... In this game, he's like, Klay Thompson, baby. And did you see Izzo's press conference after?
Oh, my God. I saw the clips of it.
I was watching this game at my daughter's birthday. So, like, as soon as the game was over, I had to walk out.
I have retweeted this. You have to find out. Like, I think it was, like, Fox Sports. Like, just put out, like, a highlight.
It's like a two-minute.
He's like, I'm so sick of having to coach this team the way I have to
reinvent. He has to reinvent his team on the bench,
like
I think he said.
Three or four times he's like, oh, this guy, he's got four threes all season.
I wish I had Michigan's roster. They play some defense.
I've been smoking cigarettes for 35 years. My name's Tom Izzo.
Poor put upon Tom Izzo.
Do you enjoy a good Izzo press conference or a good D'Antonio press conference more?
He's just the...
Izzo by far.
I mean, D'Antonio is like, you know.
You know what he's going to say. He's,
just grumps.
He's just going to be little grumps. Brother.
And like Izzo will go up there and be like, please kill me now. I have emphysema anyway.
You guys, his whole thing is you guys know how good of a coach I am. So this wasn't absolutely wasn't my fault.
I can't imagine like meeting this guy and be like, yep, want to play for that dude.
I
Well, if he's holding a bag of cash.
Well, if he's holding
Draymond's bag of cash.
I mean, that might like push me like over the edge. I'm like, all right, I'll pay you for Draymond's bag of cash. But like, I don't know. He just seems like the worst human imaginable.
And the thing is like, I didn't think Michigan State played overly terrible. They did turn the ball over a lot, but they shot well. They were efficient from three. I mean, that was a weird thing.
62 points.
Right, like, but I mean, I guess they only took 48 shots, and Indiana took 61.
There you go.
So there's offensive rebounds and turnovers.
Well, like at one point, like Justin Smith had like 13 of their 15 points. Like they would have been, it would have been like the game that we had at Assembly Hall if Justin Smith wasn't playing out of his mind.
Does that not just like infuriate you that they somehow turn the ball over 14 times against Indiana, against us? They have like three.
I mean, yeah.
I mean, like, you know, that's basketball and it happens. And I don't want to be like, it sucks because that always happens against State kind of guy. It's just kind of like.
It wasn't that always happen. I mean, State came out from the Michigan game. They were. Just tip your cap. That was a really good game by Michigan State.
Not complaining. Well, I mean, at Cassius Winston was.
In this clip, he's like, oh, we're so tired. We were dog tired.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That was another one. Man.
And it's like, well, maybe you played Cassius Winston 40 minutes against Michigan. Maybe that has something.
What's the closest you've seen Beilein remotely to that?
No, nothing.
Never?
Nothing in the history of John Beilein has ever been like that. When, you know, this post-State press conference, he's just like, well, gee, that was a great game, guys. Too bad we lost. they're totally different people.
Wouldn't even blame Poole. No, wouldn't do anything.
Beilein will get his jabs in, but he does it so subtly you don't figure it out for like two days.
Like he talked about Charles Matthews, and like, you know, Charles was really affected by that. And then he said, we're not complaining. They have injuries too. I'm just like, that's accurate. That's accurate.
Is he the king of trolls?
What? No.
In that way, where he does it so subtly.
No, he's not even trying. Like he's not trying to troll anybody.
Oh
no.
Oh no 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 no. John Beilein.
Who's he trolling?
Craig Ross.
He was not. Well, Craig brings that on himself.
He's not trolling Izzo because he knows Izzo complains about this stuff because nobody doesn't know that.
So you think he's killing him with kindness?
So he's just kind of saying,
we're not going to complain about this thing I know Tom Izzo's complaining about right now.
Or has already complained about on repeat.
I don't know. I just
John Beilein absolutely knows how to do that.
I think
just like John Beilein knows exactly when the camera's on Jim Harbaugh.
No, I think his... No.
That is
no, no, no. His heart is too pure. Don't besmirch.
That was the best. That was the best.
You're besmirching just John Beilein's heart.
Going back and forth in front of the camera.
He was right about that call.
Yeah.
He was right about that call.
Because when Beilein gets to that level of frustrated, he probably is right.
Also, the score is on the bottom of the screen, and it's like Michigan by 20.
He's just stomping, waving, pointing. What was that?
How could you get over here? I'm going to tell you about it.
If you're looking for a mortgage and you're a Michigan fan, there's only one place to go. Homeshore Lending. Fair and honest, Homeshore Lending is local, efficient, and small enough that you'll work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest. Matt bleeds maize and blue, and so does his family.
Hi, this is Matt Demarest, owner of Homeshore Lending. We're a local mortgage company based here in Ann Arbor on State Street, but we serve the entire state of Michigan, helping people buy or refinance their homes. We care about doing things the right way and treating people the right way, but we also care deeply about the Wolverines, and I wanted to introduce you to a couple of the biggest Michigan fans I know.
Hi, I'm Cooper, I'm 10.
I'm Colby, and I'm 8.
Who's the best team in the whole country?
Michigan!
Homeshore Lending at 2723 South State Street in Ann Arbor. For more info, go to homeshorelending.com. That's HOMESUREELENDING.com. Or call Matt at 734-531-9950. Homeshore Lending. NMLS number 1161358. Equal housing lender.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley. So did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGO Blah. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. know you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
If you get in foul trouble in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man on your bench. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
Welcome in Steve Lorenz with 24/7 for Inside the Crooked Blue Line. How you doing, Steve?
Good. How are you guys?
Well, we're immediately post-Maryland, so we're doing pretty well.
Doing well now, yeah.
Yeah.
Good game. Fun game to watch.
So we thought we'd check in with you with 2020 recruiting. So 24/7 is just released their kind of like first comprehensive, I'd say, rankings for the 2020 class. Is that correct?
I'd say so. I mean, you know how we do like a really, really early one? This is the first one we've done since then, and there was actual, we actually put time into it, you know, and evaluate film and that type of stuff. So this was, yeah, this is probably the most comprehensive overhaul we've done, not just in that class, but really one of the more comprehensive ones we've done, period, just because it's been so long since we did that original ranking. So, yeah, lots of big moves, both up and down across the board.
And all the people in your rankings exist.
Yeah, that's the other thing I was going to kind of say that. Yeah, you know, and so they are all human beings who are actually real. So there's that. We have that going for us, too. So
kind of the big news from Michigan's perspective is that Braden McGregor, the defensive end out of Port Huron, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Flew up to, he's not a five-star yet, but if he retains his ranking at the end of the year, he's number 27 in the country, I believe, he would be a five-star.
Yeah, so he went up. Like I said, here's the deal. From my standpoint, I can throw some names around, and but I don't really have any obviously say in where they actually end up being ranked. McGregor ended up, I knew he was going to get a significant bump, but I think he ended up even higher than what I thought he would be. Again, it's a guy I had been saying for the last month or so. I think he's the number one overall target on their recruiting board when you talk about need, and then him being an in-state guy and then them having a good shot, you know, it's like, I think he'd be like that number one overall guy for them this cycle. And so, now it's okay for him to be the number one target because now he's ranked high. So, you know, from a fan standpoint, so, you know, so that, yeah, that wasn't a huge surprise that he got a big bump, but I do think he went a little bit higher than maybe what I thought he would, but the potential's there. I mean, he's got some really nice film, a lot of good attributes, you know, all that stuff Michigan loves, multi-sport athlete, comes from a good family, you know, good area too. Like they like, they've enjoyed traveling up there, I hear. So, yeah, he's going to be a guy, and, you know, I don't know when he'll verbal. I suspect he won't be a guy that'll drag it out, but he'll be a name we'll be talking about the rest of the process, I'm sure.
And, True has a crystal ball in for him to Michigan. Do you have one?
Yeah, I just put one in a few weeks ago. Michigan, Notre Dame, he is going to take some other visits. He is going to make the sort of that SEC, ACC tour. I think he's going to see Clemson and Georgia and all those schools. My instinct is he's not the type of guy that would leave. But again, I mean, we'll see. Either way, though, as things stand now, I'd be pretty surprised as far as I think Michigan's in a really good standing right now.
The other kind of big in-state recruit news is that James Rogers, the guard out of Oak Park, has been a frequent visitor to Michigan. I think it's like, what, five times in the last how many months?
Yeah, it's been the last few months he's been on campus, I want to say five times, which is, you know, he's a kid. I think, you know, I remember meeting him. He was at the Grand Valley camp a couple of years ago and had no offers, was starting to see interest. So, I mean, you knew that this kid was going to be a recruit for sure. Kind of a guy who ended up getting a bunch of offers really quickly. And I think the process, like, you know, some kids like handle it differently, I guess the best way to say it. He likes the recruiting process and he's been pretty open about it, which I'll give him credit. A lot of guys pretend they don't like it, but then love it. He's been pretty open about it. You know, I think for a while, I think there was a time he was close to committing to Ohio State. I think there was a time he was close to committing to Georgia, but that seems to have slowed down a little bit. And yeah, he's been to Michigan a lot. And I think it's one of those deals where, from our standpoint, Michigan was always kind of on the periphery of his recruitment. But now at this point, I mean, you can't really ignore that many visits in a short amount of time. Now, does that mean, I don't think it means they're not going to get him necessarily, but I mean, I definitely think they're a factor. They have to be. You wouldn't be up there that often, you know, if you weren't legitimately interested to some extent. So that one's going to be a fun one, I'd say. It's going to be an interesting one because, again, like I said, Georgia, you got Ohio State. I know Tennessee's another school that he's really liked. But I do think Michigan's going to stick around. You know, it'll just be interesting to see, you know, kind of how he goes about it. Is he an early commit guy? Is he going to drag it out to the All-Star game? I mean, that'll be kind of interesting. But again, top 50 guy. I still kind of think, even though we bumped McGregor ahead of him, I still think Rogers probably the best player in the state, in my opinion. Either way, though, both those guys are elite. And yeah, Michigan's in on both of them.
And the other guy who got kind of a big bump this revision was J.D. Johnson, the quarterback commit out of
Arizona.
So his is, yep. If you had a comparable for him, who would that be?
Oh boy, he's got his strictly his throwing ability. He reminds me a lot of Dylan McCaffrey. I don't think he's necessarily the playmaker on his feet that McCaffrey can be. But strictly as a passer, I think he's got a lot of those assets. He's another guy though. I know one of the things. Nobody in our latest 24/7 from our standpoint. No, Johnson did get a fourth star in the composite, but from our strict rankings, he didn't bump into the 20 in the top 24/7. I do think he's a guy that's going to keep rising, though. His original grade and ranking was, I think, probably handed out before he even took over for Spencer Rattler. So he was the backup quarterback for Spencer Rattler at Pinnacle High School in Phoenix, and Rattler was the number one quarterback in the 19 class. He got into some disciplinary deal or something like early in the year, and Johnson came in and took over, played really, really well. That's how Michigan, you know, he caught their attention through that play, you know, and so that was the first time. I don't know. I think we gave him somewhat of a bump, but he's a guy, again, I think once more people see him, once there's more film out there on him, I think he's a guy that you're going to see kind of rise. You know, it's not a coincidence. I mean, Michigan went after him and took a commitment from him pretty early. You know, and at the time, he wasn't like a household name or a guy that many of us really knew a lot about. You know, but for them to pursue him and take him that early at a position where, I mean, I feel like their track record scouting the quarterback position has been pretty solid. You know, I think he's a guy to keep an eye on ranking-wise.
The other news for Michigan in this 24/7 re-rank wasn't great. A lot of guys took some tumbles. Is that more just if you're standing still when you're ranked in 300, you're going to tumble, or were there some reevaluations in there?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a mix. Some of these guys, you know, like the St. Francis kids will be interesting going forward because there'll be a lot of eyes on them, you know, because they have like 16 or 17 D1 kids now on their roster. So, you know, that there could be scouts and analysts will be out there a lot. I think the offensive lineman, Mizukua, or I don't really know how you properly pronounce it, but is a guy that I think will rise as well. He reminds me a little bit of Carson Barnhart last cycle as like an athletic kid who's really raw, you know, and I think his senior film will go a long ways in determining how the analysts feel.
He's not as
feel.
Long as Barnhart, though, is he?
No, probably not. Prospect? Yeah, I wouldn't say that, but just from that, just the style, I suppose, you know. And here's the other thing, too, like, people don't understand, like, they took six last cycle, all of which were guys they were really, really high on. You know, it's, I don't want to say it's a luxury for them in this cycle, but at the same time, like, they can take a guy that's maybe a little more of a project, I feel like, in this cycle, especially because they're in on a lot of top target type guys up front right now, you know, and so I don't think it's a big deal to take, let alone at a program like that, you know, where you never know, where if you get a few guys on board, maybe you can get a couple of the bigger name prospects that are there, right? So no harm there. But the rest of the guys, yeah, I mean, some of these guys have been scouted relatively heavily. I think, like, Andre Seldon is a kid I probably would have higher than where he is for us. But at the same time, I know that he's been about as heavily scouted as any of their commitments have. So I'm not sure where his ranking specifically would go from here on out, just because he's, you know, he's been to so many camps and done so much, you know. And I suppose if he, because he's already been invited to the Under Armour game, I suppose he's a guy that could see something change then. I don't know if, like, his senior film at Belleville is going to change a lot of minds or anything like that.
Yeah, he's kind of capped out, meaning, you know,
being tuna, yeah, because he's been around. I mean, he's a kid we've known about for a long time, you know. And but on the flip side, though, like I said, I mean, he's a kid. I think he's going to be one of those guys that outdoes his ranking, at least where he's currently ranked at, because the kid, he just always shows up at this stuff. But then his film and pads, like, backs it up, in my opinion. So we'll see. But right now, yeah, I mean, it's mostly the biggest takeaway for me for the rankings was that they've done a great job in evaluating a lot of positions again, whereas, like, they were guys that they offered either early on period or maybe early on in this winter evaluation period who took huge leaps, specifically got, like, guys on the offensive line, a kid like Tosh Baker, who's actually JD Johnson's teammate, went from, like, the 700s to 54th overall. And they've done, you know, and this is what I think we had talked about this when we were reviewing the 19 class about how many guys had leapt like 300, 400 spots throughout the process. And you're kind of starting to see that, you know. I'd say safety was a position specifically where it was like I had a pretty good idea of the guys that Michigan was really, really high on. And this was before we did the re-rank. And sure enough, you know, I take like maybe the top six guys on their board, in my opinion, and five of them moved up over 150 spots, you know. And so it's like they seem to have a really good eye on, you know, who's going to be, you know, and who's good. Right. And so, you know, that's the thing where that's what I'd be looking for if I was a fan. Like, I wouldn't fret too much about where things are right now, ranking wise, stuff like that, because I feel like they've discovered and are in on a lot of the not like top 15, 20 type guys, but I'd say from like 30 to 150, they're in on a ton of those kids. So I think they've set up their board pretty nicely.
And they're not going to have a huge class, correct?
I don't think so, but
don't ask
you know,
him that. He hates that question.
Yeah, oh, yeah, it's like sorry, Steve. Well, but who knows at this point, right? I mean, I was thinking that about 19 at this time last year, and it ended up being 26. 26 is not what I would have said before the cycles, you know, started. So, kind of one of those things where we'll just have to see like who's around still at this time next year, and you know. But again, I think it's a spot where running back, I think, is this position they really, really they have a high need. Defensive end is a position I think they have a high need for. But besides that, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I feel like it's a deal where they could just maybe start to look to take just the best players on their board, period, you know, and not neglect any positions necessarily, but like not maybe worry too much about, you know, maybe linebacker too, I guess, would probably be another position I think they need to supplement a little bit more too.
Yeah, but they already got two of them committed.
Right. I still, they won't be done there for sure. They're going to keep going there, I assume.
It's a uptick in the talent in the state. I know we already talked about Justin Rogers, but and Grip McGregor also. Is Michigan going to sweep state like they have in the past? Are they going to lose a lot more guys out of state this year? Like, what's the outlook in the state?
there are a lot of interesting races in state. I think a guy like Malik Carr, who's a, well, he's a wide receiver right now. He's like a
receiver, tight end.
Yeah, I think they should pitch like a Funchess type deal to him. I'm assuming they probably have already. I don't think he's quite the explosive athlete. You know, Funchess was really athletic for his size. I think Carr is close. I don't know if he's quite at that same level. But he's a guy, yeah, he's legit 6'6". He's the kind of guy I always say, like, I remember like when Mark Andrews was being recruited and insisted that he wanted to play wide receiver wherever he went. And then he signed with Oklahoma and they immediately switched him to tight end. And I think now he starts for the Ravens.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I look at Carr as one of those types of kids who could he play wide receiver at the college level? I mean, I suppose, but he's also the type that has the build and athleticism where if a kid like that embraced playing tight end, they'd probably be a pro, you know, and so he's an intriguing one. Makari Page, the safety out of West Bloomfield, you know, so I think people are waiting to get one of the elite kids out of West Bloomfield with Ron Bellamy being there. But Page, I don't think he's quite like Lance Dixon, but I also don't think he's a lock to Michigan either. I think that'll be an interesting one. Bryce Mostella is a kid out of East Kentwood that I don't know if they've backed off there. I feel like maybe they have a little bit. Is a kid, I think he's an Auburn legacy, actually, randomly, but had really high interest in Michigan. I don't know if it's a sweep the state type deal, but I do think that they'll get most of the guys at their highest on, right? So, like, another one would be Cameron Martinez, the athlete out of Muskegon, is a kid that isn't, like, a top 24/7 type kid, but Michigan seems to really, really like him a lot. I think they're in good shape there. You know, granted, I think he just got Ohio State and I think Penn State. I don't think Notre Dame's offered yet, but, you know, that might turn into a little bit of a race. But, you know, I think by and large, and that's kind of the thing, like people like, I know 17 was a great year for them in state, but really they've always done, you know, even in 18 when I don't know if people felt like, you know, or 19 when they miss on Dobbs and Barnett. I mean, outside of 19, but even in 18, I mean, Hutchinson, Mayfield, and Ryan Hayes were the top three prospects in the state in our rankings. And so I suspect that, you know, that momentum in state will continue. I think that's one of those things, like, I think they've recruited really well in state under Harbaugh. I don't think that's ever been a big, they can't help the Dobbs-Barnett deal. I mean, that was,
yeah,
that was gone. That was a lost cause for a long time. So,
well, and Logan Brown, too, is, I think, the one that stuck in a lot of people's craw this year.
Which one?
Yeah, and that Logan and Brown, that one was yeah. Right. That was just tackle. Yeah, that was just a he just liked Wisconsin. You know, it wasn't like a Michigan.
You can't fault an offensive tackle for liking Wisconsin. 100%.
Right. Absolutely.
It's
you know,
strange that they don't recruit a little bit better on the OL. Like in terms, I mean, they obviously recruit very well, but like you know, if I'm a 5-star offensive lineman, I mean.
They probably like they know about a guy.
Where will
that
I be put
love.
Upon a palanquin and worshipped, Wisconsin?
right. So yeah, so this I think this cycle I think will be good, and then actually 2021 will be interesting. Not to get too ahead, but you know,
now
the
I think
two
you're talking about hockey recruiting.
Oh man, but the two kids out of Clarkston though, Spindler and Dallinger. I mean, Dallinger's the number two player in the country in our rankings in the 2021, and I think I want to say Spindler's like 12th.
Yeah, they're both way up there.
Yeah, so you have two, you know, so it'll be, you know, those will be interesting ones too going forward. I mean, those races will start to pick up once they can contact that cycle. But overall, yeah, I think it'll be a good in-state class. They seem to be pursuing a decent amount of kids pretty aggressively, maybe more so than they have in like 18 and even 19, where I know they signed some guys, but you know how they do, they offer some and don't ever really end up recruiting them type deal. So seem to be a little bit less of that in 20 so far. But, you know, Ohio State, Michigan State, same suspects as always will be around challenging.
All right. Thank you. Good talking to you, man. We'll talk to you again. All right. You got a deal? I think you have a deal. Do you have a deal?
Nah, no deal right now.
Well,
just subscribe anyway.
Just subscribe anyway. He deserves the money.
Yep. Appreciate that. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, Steve. We appreciate it.
Yep. All their recruits are real.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I'm David Nasternak, along with Brian Cook and Seth Fisher. And as excited as I am for Michigan's tournament run this year, I'm even more excited for next year when Simpson is going to develop a three-point hookshot.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
Seth has a short attention span.
We should turn him up, shouldn't we? Which line is he on? He's on 7-8.
Hello?
Whoa!
Ryan, literally 1 second before you pick up, we should turn him up.
And puts you and to just, volume 11, apparently.
Sorry about
blast.
Not you.
No, it's
Ryan finally got rid of his cold, so he can't break our eardrums coughing. So now he's just
all right.